Welcome to The Challenge, where we'll discuss the challenges that life gives us. Challenges from the perspective of people with disabilities, and challenges from those who encounter a disabled person in any walk of life. If you have comments about the show or would like to be a guest, call a listener feedback line at 206-333-0257. That's 206-333-0257. Or send email to challenge8255@gmail.com. And now your host, Steve Bauer.
Well, this is program number 3. Welcome in. We're going to continue this week right where we left off last week, talking to Steve Bauer of California. Still talking about radio, but he's about ready to make a career change.
Excellent. I've got one particular restaurant that my wife and I frequent, and he has talked about doing a remote and wants me to do it. Unfortunately, we can't do it during my jazz show because this particular restaurant is not open on Sunday. Otherwise, it would be perfect. On the other hand, we're thinking about doing one on a Friday evening from 4 until 7, something like that. And so you've given me some ideas on how I can pull it off, because I wasn't sure how I would if it does happen. Maybe this spring we'll actually pull that off, so that may give me some some opportunity to try that. But it is interesting in doing the co-MC stuff at the jazz concert. As generally as the program director and I are walking back through the crowd to the area where we had our reserved seating, it is amazing how many people will reach up and just touch your arm as you're going by and tell you how much they enjoy the show and that type of thing. And it kind of makes you feel good. But I'll tell you, man, the first time I walked out on that stage area and I heard my voice coming out of those speakers at that volume level, it scared me. I mean, it was just the weirdest feeling. But I know you'll know what I'm saying. I was just so nervous that I'm amazed I made it through it. But once you get into a situation, you get used to it, and the next time it's not as hard to do. Did you find that true with especially doing the remote broadcast?
Definitely. And, you know, the remote broadcasts weren't too big of a problem because I always brought a Walkman and headphones and, you know, turned down. We had the radio station blasting wherever we were, and if there were speakers near me, I would turn it down because I hate remotes that have feedback and stuff like that. And so I'd always, you know, have a Walkman with me and headphones and listen to myself while I was talking, and so that helped me in a lot of ways. I could hear exactly what it sounded like on the air and, you know, make sure the mix of my voice and the music was okay. And also, one challenge I had was I always liked better to have two microphones, because if I was going to interview somebody on the air, a business owner or whatever, I never really got a good way to have the mic in front of my face and then stick the mic in front of his face, you know, and without bashing him with it or something like that. Or a couple times I had to do it, I would listen on the headphones and realize he was off mic and try and follow his, you know, find his face with the microphone to get him sounding good. So I really tried to have two mics, and fortunately we had enough equipment. We usually took a mixer out there with a couple of different mics, and so that made life a lot easier. But just doing one mic was a challenge. But yeah, actually being on stage introducing an act is a very scary thing, and a lot of my friends couldn't figure out why I was so scared, because gosh, I'd been in radio for how many years? I guess my first on stage, bringing a band on, as they call it, was 1993, I guess, very soon after I came on full time. And I always remember I must have just been shaking, and I'll never forget, and I always, you know, love him for this. Eric Marienthal was playing with Chick Corea, and Chick Corea was actually the guy that was on, but Eric was playing in his band. And I don't know why or whatever, but he came up to me standing backstage and just, "Hey, I'm Eric. You're Steve from KMGQ, you know, blah, 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 blah." And he says, "How you doing?" And I says, "Well," and I told him, "this is my first You know, I've been listening to your music for years, but this is the first time I've ever emceed a show live. And he just, you know, made me feel very calm and said, you know, you'll be fine and you're great. And, you know, first time I played on stage, it was really crazy, but you'll get used to it just fine. And you're right, after you've done it a couple times, it became no big deal. But, boy, those first couple of times. And I finally figured out, and I told people that the reason I was so nervous is when you're in a radio studio, you're just there by yourself, and, you know, if you mess up or you get tongue-tied or something like that, if it really comes down to it, you can just turn the mic off and play a commercial or play a record. You're out there on stage, faux-pawing or something like that. There's nothing you can do but walk away. You know, you have to finish it, so it's a very different experience. But after doing it a few times, I came to really enjoy it, and you're right. The smooth jazz audience, and I've been told this by record label people, I've never worked in country, but I've been told that smooth jazz and country are some of the most loyal listeners in the world. And, you know, the format is a big part of their life and much more than many other formats. They just love the fact that, you know, you're turning them on to new music. And it was a very different experience working in classical music. The listeners there are very loyal also. But what I found was, and obviously this is a generalization, not true in every case, obviously, but in many, many cases, the classical music audience was there to prove to you how much more they knew than you did. So I would get people coming up saying, you know, you should play, you know, the Herbert von Karajan version of this instead of the, you know, so-and-so. It's a much better, you know, why did you play that? And lots of criticism and lots of comments like that, whereas the smooth jazz was just love you, love you, love you, love you, you know. And, you know, I met my girlfriend and we listened to your show and, you know, we're going to get married and, you know, thank you for providing the backdrop. And it was just a much more positive experience meeting folks live.
Now, I'm not making this up at all. You mentioned Eric Marienthal and Chick Corea. In my hand, a new CD that just came in a couple of days ago is the latest from Chick Corea. Here it is right there. Oh, my goodness, that's funny. Let's move on from radio. I mean, you and I could probably sit here and talk radio stuff for hours. Because once radio gets in your blood, it's a terminal disease, and you can't get rid of it. But after radio, there is always something else. And you have found yourself in a completely different field. And why don't you just tell us about that?
Well, as I said, when I was in college, I was an English major, and I started out thinking that I wanted to teach high school. And then I got thinking that there was really a dearth of folks teaching blind kids. And as my radio career progressed, I read all the statistics as to how few people were learning Braille. And many years before I got out of radio, I was thinking that really I would like to someday teach Braille. It's just such an incredibly important part of my life. I don't see how I could possibly function in any one of a number of ways without Braille. And, you know, the statistic I quote to people is, you know, something like 15% of blind people have some working knowledge of Braille, but 90% of employed blind people use Braille. And frankly, I don't see how the other 10% do it. I mean, obviously there's computers and tapes and all kinds of different ways of doing things. But when I knew at some point I was going to get out of radio, and I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to happen. I didn't think it would happen the way it would, but I gave a lot of thought to maybe going back to school and getting my teaching credential and teaching kids Braille. What actually ended up happening was when I got downsized from KMGQ, I had gotten married, and my wife lived in the Los Angeles area, and I was in Santa Barbara, and we had a commuter relationship. And we, I think, missed maybe two or three weekends in 4.5 years of this commuter relationship of us dating and then being married. And so it was obviously a no-brainer. I had planned to move to Los Angeles when I had a job, and it didn't quite work out that way. But, you know, looking for another job in Santa Barbara wasn't even a consideration. So I came down to L.A. and ended up picking up on a volunteer opportunity working for the Foundation for the Junior Blind, which is now Junior Blind of America, teaching newly blinded adults, Braille. I was a volunteer in their Braille class. Did that for a few months, and then actually got a position as an on-call instructor where I was there as needed, as people were out sick or on vacation or on jury duty or whatever. Did that for a year, and then went to work for Braille Institute, their Anaheim campus in Orange County, the Orange County Regional Center, one of five regional centers they have. And I've been teaching Braille there for the past 3.5 years. The first of the year, I picked up some more duties as what they call their adaptive technology specialist for their youth and career services department. And I oversee the loaner program, which they have for loaning Braille notes and laptops and packmates and talking dictionaries and bookports and different things to junior high and high school kids, and going to be doing some teaching and training of kids and teachers and rehab folks in how to use the note takers and how to use JAWS. And so that's what I'm doing at Braille now. It's very, very different than radio, but I've been very fortunate to come up with a second career that I love as much as radio, and it's worked out very well. And, you know, I miss the interaction with the listeners, and I miss, you know, the opportunity to listen to all the new music. But boy, I tell you, I tell people I did radio for 26 years, and the first 20 of them were great. And once the consultants and the corporations and everything came in, it just made it a lot less fun. So I don't miss that part of it. So I'm very grateful to have found another career that I'm having as much fun as I did in radio, just in a very different way and doing very different things.
Well, I keep hoping that one of these days you'll find enough time in your life that you can maybe join us here on ACB Radio and start doing a jazz show again. I think that would be absolutely fantastic. Because I do remember listening to you on the internet when your station was streaming, and I thought it was just so cool to hear Steve Bauer doing smooth jazz. It was just kind of neat. But when you're at the Braille Institute, because you've got some radio experience, do they always snag you to, would you record this on our phone system, or could you do this recording for us, and that type of thing? Do you get pulled into little side projects because of your broadcast experience?
Actually, I haven't been asked to record phone stuff at Braille Institute, although I did that for KMGQ on one of the owners. My voice was on the voicemail system for, I guess, about a year and a half. But what I have become is the voice of Braille Institute, as my supervisor likes to say. I do a lot of the emceeing events for the volunteer dinner, volunteer event they have once a year. And I've also become the MC for an event that's called the Braille Challenge, which is Braille Institute has competitions all over the country. They sponsor them for kids aged 6 to 18 in Braille reading and writing and graphics and comprehension and that sort of thing. And the top 50 students, the top 50 competitors, are flown to Los Angeles at Braille's expense and compete in the National Braille Challenge Finals. And I've, for the last 3 years, been emceeing the ceremonies where they give out all the awards and that sort of thing, and that's been a lot of fun. I'm kind of the voice of Braille Institute, and then they usually have a superstar on to actually give out the award, somebody who's much more famous than I am and the kids are really into. Last year they had the gentleman who does the voice for SpongeBob SquarePants, so he gave out all the awards and that sort of thing, but I just had to bring him on and bring on the various dignitaries from Braille Institute and that sort of thing. But yes, I have become known as the voice of Orange County, I guess because I've done all this radio stuff.
You're listening to The Challenge. To receive email updates about the show and our guests, you're invited to join our mailing list. Simply send a blank message to challenge 8255-subscribe at googlegroups.com. That's challenge 8255-subscribe at googlegroups.com. Once again, your host, Steve Bauer.
But I'm really glad to see that there's effort, at least in one small spot in the world, to promote learning Braille because it's essential. And we're faced with what they generally say, what, 70% of people who are blind or visually impaired are unemployed. And of the 30% that are employed, 90% of those need to be Braille readers, because you really just can't function in the workplace unless you've got some reading and writing skills. I had a guy one time many years ago who was a college student, and his advisor wanted to come meet with me. And I said, sure, you know, we set it all up, and they came in and were talking about things. And one of the first questions I asked him was, okay, what is your Braille reading skill? Well, not really. I mean, I can figure it out, but everything I turn to, I mean, okay, what about your typing? I never learned to type. And I'm thinking, how are you going to go into a workplace and succeed if you don't have those skills? And it's so essential to have Braille. And, I know it's antiquated, but I still have Perkins Braille writers all around me. I've got one sitting beside me here in my studio. I've got one on my desk at my office, and I use them all the time. I know a lot of people say, oh, I never use that, I just use the computer. But I still use the Perkins. It's my, I generally call it my 10-pound pencil. So what are you finding with the people that you come into contact with at the Braille Institute? Are they learning Braille? Are they actually using Braille? And are they using tools such as the Perkins or the Slate and Stylus to write Braille? What are you finding the situation to be there?
Well, at Braille Institute, it's all over the map. And I should say that it's very different than when I was at what is now Junior Blind of America, because those folks are generally much younger, and they are typically college-bound, you know, taking 6 or 9 months off to get some blindness skills and then go on to college. So, and there's also very serious goals set by Junior Blind, so it is all paid for by rehab, and goals are set, and frankly, if you don't meet the goals, you're out the door. So I think a larger percentage of those folks are actually using Braille, either Perkins Braillers or note takers or whatever. Braille Institute, we've got them all over the map, and I've actually come to accept that that situation, and accept Braille's mission, if you will, is not necessarily to make expert Braille readers. You know, I've got folks that are literally in their 80s that have learned the alphabet and just bought a Dymo labeler or used the label thing in a Braille writer to mark their medicine bottles, mark their DVDs, mark their CDs, whatever. And I've got folks that come in and learn Braille at Braille Institute and then go off and go to college and work and are using a note taker and pretty much everything in between. And, you know, what I've come to accept over the last 3 years is that, you know, not everybody wants to use Braille as much as I do, but that everybody who's, you know, made the effort to get in the class has some use for it, and just trying to find what that is, encourage them to go as far as they can or as they want to. But there's no single model, and actually my classes are not classes in the traditional sense of the word. It's all one-on-one or one-on-two or one-on-three, and I've got some great volunteers, so if we have 8 or 10 people in a classroom, we can have, you know, a few things going. But I think it's with the advent of the note takers and stuff, there's actually more Braille being used. I don't see a lot of folks using Slate and Stylus. I've probably taught 6 people how to use the Slate over the past 3 years. But mostly it's Braille writers and note takers. And I got to tell you, I never thought I'd say this, but since I've had a Braille note, I use the Perkins Brailler whole lot less than I used to. I was always losing little pieces of paper and cards and things I would write things on, and I'm much more organized now because of the Braille note. Still use the Braille writer for making labels and for putting Braille on envelopes that I want to keep track of that have stuff in them and that sort of thing. But for all of my serious writing and note-taking, and of course the Braille note has a day planner and an address book and all that sort of thing, that Braille note is with me almost all the time.
When we started our program, I indicated that we were going to go down several different roads, and we're about ready to head down another road. Your wife has a disability, and I wonder if you might tell us how you guys met, and share with us a little bit about her disability and maybe some of the challenges that you face with both your disability of being blind and hers as well.
Kathy and I met in 1998 through a couple of mutual friends. Neither one of us were really looking for somebody to be with, and our friend said, oh, you know, to me, you've got to meet Kathy, and you've got to meet Steve. And she had worked in radio and in radio advertising, and we had a lot else in common, our interest in politics and different social issues and that sort of thing. So as an attempt to get my friends off my back, I just said, okay, I'll have a phone conversation. We had a couple of emails, and then she wanted to get on the phone and as a quicker way to do it than email. So we talked once, what I thought would be for 10 minutes, and we ended up talking literally most of the day, 12 hours with a couple of breaks for lunch and dinner and that sort of thing. That was on a Sunday. I came down and met her the following Saturday, and like I said before, I think in 4.5 years we missed maybe a couple of weekends. We were together almost every weekend, and sometimes she came up during the week when she could, and that sort of thing. Kathy has MS, multiple sclerosis, and I guess the biggest challenge is recognizing the differences in how our disabilities affect us. My disability is a given. There are things I cannot do and can never do because I'm blind. I can't read print. I can't drive a car. You know, I have a hard time finding things when I drop them someplace or whatever. And I've been blind all my life, so that's all I've ever known. Kathy's disability is more of a moving target, and she acquired her disability when she was 30, so she had many, many years of living as a, quote, normal, quote, able-bodied person. And like I say, her disability is a moving target where she has good days and bad days, and she can do things on a good day that she can't do on a bad day, and she can do things, but not as long as other people. So, you know, she can walk, but she can't run a marathon. So if we're just going to be out bopping around for a half an hour, she can walk, and that's just fine. And if we're going to be going to a convention or in a mall for 6 hours, then she'll take her wheelchair. And I think that kind of freaks people out sometimes because they don't quite understand it. And, you know, frankly, it took me a little while to figure out exactly what was going on. And, you know, we'll meet people all the time who we'll see her walking around, and they'll come up and say, oh, so glad you're feeling so good today. Or, you know, they'll see her using the wheelchair and, oh, I'm sorry you're not feeling well. And it's not a matter of feeling well or feeling bad in many cases. It's just a matter of you know, what has to get done and what, you know, what kind of a situation we're in. So that's been a challenge to understand that and to deal with other people's misunderstanding of it.
Is she able to drive? And if not, how do you deal with transportation issues?
Well, again, she can drive short distances and can't drive freeways. So she can drive around our local area, Culver City, West L.A. And so when we're going locally, she drives. And when we need to go a long distance, we take paratransit, access services, as it's known here in L.A. County.
Well, Steve, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us on this show, and it's been interesting to compare notes about radio and to see what direction you took after you left radio and you're working with the Braille Institute, which is completely different than radio. But maybe one of these days, like I say, we'll be able to get you back on, at least on ACB Radio Interactive, and I think it'd be an absolute thrill to have you do a smooth jazz show along with me sometime.
Well, I'd enjoy it, Steve, and you know, I want to do it someday. It may be a while. At this point, it may be when I retire. Who knows? I just, I love the job at Braille, but one of the issues is that you know, working full-time and then that paratransit ride to and from kind of chews up most of my weekdays, and so everything gets shuffled onto the weekends, and I'm having to let go of some activities that I was doing before when I wasn't working as many hours, and so I don't see myself adding a whole new activity. As you well know, it's not just a two-hour show. It's the preparation for it and that sort of thing. And I love what you and others are doing on ACB Radio, and I'm thoroughly enjoying being a listener. And someday I want to get back on the air, but it may be a while at this point. But choices you have to make, And, you know, broadcast radio is very good to me for 26 years, and I enjoy that, and I'm thoroughly enjoying what I'm doing now, so maybe someday we'll do radio again.
Well, there you have it. My conversation with Steve Bauer from California. That was interesting. Oh, probably, I don't know when it was. It was maybe 16, 17 years ago. Box arrived by UPS. I opened it up thinking I didn't order anything. And it was a piece of equipment that a company had sent me instead of him. Too bad I couldn't have kept it. Next week on our show, we're going to take a bit of a different direction. As I said, one of the things we're going to do is talk about challenges faced by not only persons with disabilities, but challenges faced by persons who come into encountering situations, if you will, with people who have disabilities in any walk of life. And my guest is going to be Bob Harris. He is a driver of a paratransit van. We'll talk to Bob about his job and how he handles all of the challenges that come his way day by day as he helps people get to and from work and other places. And that is really an important thing. So many times over the years, drivers have made the comment, well, I'm just a bus driver. Well, but you know, without those people doing that job, many of us could not get to and from work, couldn't get to school, couldn't get to doctor's appointments or whatever the case may be. So these people that say they're just a bus driver are really, really putting themselves down when they don't need to be doing that, because they're very important people and they definitely serve a very important role in our lives. And without them, we would be in a world of hurt. So we'll talk to Bob next week. He's my driver, as a matter of fact. And so we have the opportunity to see each other and get to know each other. And I've had some great drivers over the years, and Bob is an excellent one as well. So we'll talk to him next week. Because of the topic, transportation is so important, and in some cases, controversial. Steve Bauer from California, who we've been talking with last week and this week, will join us again for a few minutes to talk about some of the transportation issues that he faces out in the Los Angeles area. So that'll be happening next week here on The Challenge. Have a good week, and thanks for listening.
If you have comments about the show or would like to be a guest, call a listener feedback line at 206-333-0257. That's 206-333-0257. Or send email to challenge8255@gmail.com. To receive email alerts about the show each week, including information about our guests, send a blank message to challenge8255-subscribe@googlegroups.com. That's a blank message to challenge8255-subscribe@googlegroups.com. Thanks for listening, and stay strong when encountering the challenges of life. Please join us next week at this same time for another edition of The Challenge from ACB Radio Mainstream.